ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, Kirsty Melville here, and welcome to the History Listen and the next instalment in our series, Section 71, High Court Cases That Changed Australia. In this episode, law professor Patrick Kayser revisits a High Court battle from the 1960s. It's a fight that might just help you understand how Australian schools are funded to this very day.
In the 1960s, the big issues of the day were, one, Vietnam and conscription, and two, education.
That's Dr. Michael Hogan, a retired professor of political science and a former Catholic priest. So what did Australian schools look like in the early 1960s? Helen Proctor, an associate professor at the University of Sydney, has researched the history of Australian education.
You had three main kinds of schools in Australia. You had state schools run by the state governments. You had a few elite private schools that enrolled, 5% or fewer of the population. And then you had the mainly parochial Catholic schools that were run by local parishes.
And schools in Australia were struggling to keep up with the demand.
The post-war baby boom, so schools had grown exponentially in the Second World War period.
The impact of the new settlers on Australia's way of life can be seen everywhere.
Migration was pouring people into the country. People were moving around the cities because of slum clearance and things like that. So new areas were suddenly exploding in size and there were no facilities there for them.
The tongues of many nations learning a common tongue for the children and their children's children.
A lot of the children couldn't speak English.
Jean Ely is a public education advocate. As a young music teacher based in Sydney's western suburbs in the early 1960s, she saw firsthand the impact of the education crisis on students.
When I taught out of Parramatta, that was at Arthur Phillip High School in 1962, my first year students were spending most of the time out in the playground because there were bird lice in the ceiling. This was just not acceptable in a wealthy country like Australia.
And as the number of students grew in Australia through the decade, education became more expensive to deliver. Helen Proctor again.
People had been staying longer at school so that secondary schools were growing. The curriculum was becoming more complex. Certain things like science education were coming more expensive.
Education generally was in a crisis, and especially for Catholic schools, it was in an added crisis.
So the Catholic parish schools had traditionally relied on the unpaid labour of nuns particularly, but also brothers and priests to run their schools.
And there weren't enough of them to be able to look after the increased numbers coming into the school.
In the 1960s, Michael Hogan was training to become a Catholic priest. He was sent to a parish school in Blacktown in Western Sydney.
There was a brother teaching at the other end of a hall and I was teaching at one end, facing each other with no gap between us. 100 kids, two teachers yelling at one another from opposite ends of the room. There's no way that we could have taught anybody anything in that kind of circumstance.
In the 60s, the key battle was actually about providing state aid to Catholic schools.
State aid was the term used to describe federal funding for education. Because historically, the Commonwealth had no direct role in funding education. The state governments were solely responsible for schools.
The elite Protestant schools weren't particularly lobbying for state aid. In fact, some of the elite private schools in the 1960s didn't want public money because they thought that it would actually have too many strings attached, and they saw themselves as proudly independent, and I think they saw it as akin to welfare.
This year there are more than 110,000 children in Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Melbourne alone. There are another 50,000 who are not getting a Catholic schooling. The trouble is that the system...
The view of the bishops, especially the Sydney bishops, was that they should leave all the politicking to the bishops and they would negotiate with governments and political parties. Very many lay people looked at that kind of assumption and said, that's crazy. We've been relying upon the bishops to do something for 100 years and nothing has happened. Unless we get organised, nothing will happen.
At this time, many students in Catholic schools came from poor working-class families. And on July 13, 1962, Catholic parents brought things to a head in the New South Wales town of Goulburn.
It was all over a broken toilet, quite bizarrely.
It was here at the Lady of Mercy College in Goulburn that the whole business of state aid really came to a head. This lavatory was condemned as being unsuitable and too small for the number of pupils attending this school. The health departments and the education department demanded that it be renovated. But the Catholic bishop here said that they couldn't afford to and asked the state to help. The answer was no.
This escalated to a strike whereby the parents voted to take all their kids out of the Catholic schools and send them to the local public schools to enrol. So what happened with these fabulous images of Catholic kids enrolling up to these local public schools all on one day and, you know, pandemonium ensuing?
The point that the Catholic people of Goulburn were trying to make was that if governments didn't fund Catholic schools, then the Catholic schools would have to close fairly soon. Give us the money now and you won't have to support the inflow of Catholic children into public schools.
At the time, it wasn't a huge success, but in the longer term, it is seen as a big success because of this image of kids being turned away from the public schools.
After a week, the token strike ended and success was claimed by a spokesman. The question of state aid has been tossed into political arenas throughout Australia.
By the time Catholic parents marched in Goulburn in 1962, Robert Menzies' Liberal coalition government was warming to the idea of state aid. Internally, members of the Country Party, now known as the Nationals, were supportive, as many of their own children attended private boarding schools. Menzies could see the potential for more votes. After all, the then federal Labor opposition was opposed to state aid.
It had put the right-wing Labor government in New South Wales in an almost impossible position, and this is what Menzies was exploiting. And Menzies basically was going to the country in 1963 saying, why are you Catholics supporting the Labor Party? Come to us.
Where is the sun? In 1967, 3 years after the Menzies government began funding education, teachers' union members and parents decided to form a lobby group to oppose state aid to private schools. They called themselves the National Council for the Defence of Government Schools, or the DOGS for short.
There are only two things we stand for. One is for government schools, public education, which is free, secular and universal, open to all children. And the corollary of that is that we are also wanting to fight for the separation of religion from the state. And for this reason, we oppose state aid to private religious schools.
Retired teacher Jean Ely was one of the DOGS' founding members and remains the group's treasurer over 50 years later.
We were certainly in the dissenting tradition. Well, there were also Roman Catholics amongst us.
That's what I was going to ask. Were there many religious people in the Defence Government
Schools
group?
Yes. Because the separation of church and state comes out of hundreds of years of very bloodthirsty persecution of religious people.
In 1970, the DOGS were dismayed to see federal funding for private schools extended.
Tonight, a Monday conference debate on state aid for independent schools. Three supporters
Laus Deo,
of state schools.
Praise be to God. That's the motto of this school, Sydney Grammar. One of the eight so-called elite schools now promised $9 million in government aid. Notable old boys include Mr. McMahon, the Prime Minister.
Sydney Grammar doesn't have its own dental surgery or nine-bed hospital like King's, nor does it have nine sporting ovals like Knox Grammar. But if its land was ever sold for commercial development, it would probably raise nearly $10 million. The government is already paying more than $200 a year for each grammar pupil. Whether you think it should receive an extra $1.5 million of public money depends on your point of view. And as the headmaster says, we won't know that until the next election.
we saw these very wealthy schools getting swimming pools and other things, and we still couldn't get our maintenance for basic things for our children.
In 1972, Gough Whitlam led the Labor Party to power after 23 years out of office. As deputy leader, Whitlam had spoken out against his own party's opposition to state aid. And in 1973, the Whitlam Labor government raised the coalition's flat rate grants for private schools, pegging this to 20% of the state government's funding for public schools. The Dogs wanted to challenge state aid for private schools in the High Court on the grounds that it would breach the Constitution. In order to do this, you need to prove that you're personally affected by the legal issue at stake. But it wasn't clear if the Dogs, as an interest group, could do this. So they needed the approval of an Attorney General who could launch a public interest test case on state aid in the High Court. It was difficult to find an Attorney General willing to do this. For a federal Attorney General, that would mean challenging their own party's laws. And since states were receiving funding under the state aid scheme, their Attorneys General weren't interested either.
And we didn't get to court until finally we got fiat from Wilcox in Victoria, in the Hamer government.
Jean Ely is referring there to former Victorian Attorney General Vernon Wilcox from the Liberal Hamer government. In November 1973, Wilcox took the extraordinary step of approving the Dogs' constitutional challenge to state aid.
Because he believed that people had the right to take the government to court on a constitutional issue, even if he personally disagreed with our position.
Jean Ely lived in West Melbourne, next door to the late Ray Nielsen, a fellow Dogs member and a key player behind the scenes in the High Court case. It was Nielsen who found a solicitor for the Dogs.
My name is John Nicholas Zagouras, aged 80.
So how did you arrive at the view that state aid was something to be opposed?
I remember going to Melbourne University and the first lecture in the public lecture theatre in the law school, I noticed that all the private school lads sat at the front as if they had the right to occupy those seats. And that was that serious impression of entitlement. And I always felt that state aid would assist those who had what they thought an entitlement.
The Catholic Church wasn't a party in the Dogs case, but it helped the Commonwealth defend state aid in the High Court.
The Church had a key role to play because 80% of the schools involved here were Catholic schools.
That's Brian Croke. In 1978, he was hired, fresh out of university, as the Church's research officer on the Dogs case.
There was already bipartisan political support for funding of schools, and both governments, Commonwealth and state, were actively engaged in it. It was growing significantly at that point, and there was no turning back from that in political terms, in social terms, educational terms. So I think there was a fair confidence that the case would be a victory for the Commonwealth. But nonetheless, it was the uncertainty that was injected into it rather than the fear that the world will be lost if this case is lost by the Commonwealth.
Some barristers declined to represent the Dogs in the High Court because they didn't think they could win. But the group eventually found two barristers who would take on the case.
My name is Jack Fagenbaum, and I was junior counsel to Neil McPhee for the plaintiff, commonly called the Dogs, the defence of government schools.
If there was one argument that you were determined to make above all others, what was it?
Simply that the Commonwealth had no business financing religion.
In March 1979, a preliminary trial was held before one High Court judge, the late Justice Lionel Murphy, in order to determine the facts of the matter.
Weeks were spent in his court seeking to demonstrate that the religious schools, there were Jewish schools and Catholic schools and also non-Catholic Christian schools, that their purpose was purely a religious purpose. They were interested in the religious education, not in the secular education.
Well, I think the Church thought that was a naive argument.
Brian Croke, a former research officer for the Catholic Church.
From a Church's point of view, they were pretty clear that any funding was funding for schools. The Commonwealth was funding the education of young Australians, irrespective of what school they happened to go to.
The Dogs barrister, Jack Fagenbaum, says that in that preliminary trial, the odds were stacked against them.
all of the relevant witnesses were not on our side, and in this case came from the institutions that were the recipient of the aid and that was in their interest for us to lose. So it was difficult to cross-examine them. Neil McPhee was examining a nun, and in the course of her evidence, the nun said she prayed every day. And McPhee asked her, "For whom do you pray?" "I pray for you, Mr. McPhee."
This is PM. Good evening from Hugh Evans. And as you've heard, the Prime Minister, Mr. Fraser, has reaffirmed the government's determination to continue the funding of non-government schools. The debate has flared up again over the challenge in the High Court by the Defence of Government Schools organisation.
The dogs showed Justice Murphy evidence that church schools were using public funding for religious purposes. Here's Dogs co-founder, the late Ray Nielsen, in a news report.
They're building churches with taxpayers' money. They're using it for adult religious education. They're using it to build up their parish work activities. Anybody who wants to really look at the facts can see all that.
In January 1980, Justice Lionel Murphy finished hearing the facts of the case and referred the question of whether state aid was legally valid to the full bench of the High Court. It was a small initial victory, but the dogs now needed to raise more money to pay their lawyers for the full hearing.
At a crucial point, we really had no more money. We didn't know where we were going to go. And Sylvia Child, who was one of the twin sisters of Ray Nielsen, had recently married, and she and her husband had money sent aside, I think it was well over $50,000, a lot in those days, for their dream home up at Whittlesey on the farm. And her husband made out a cheque for $50,000-odd.
So in March 1980, the Dogs High Court case finally began. The Defence of Government Schools legal team argued that there was a part of the Australian Constitution that prevented the federal government from funding religious schools.
Section 116 of the Australian Constitution.
The Commonwealth shall not make any law for establishing any religion. That was what our case was about. Did this prevent state aid being given to religious schools?
And in the United States, that is an accepted argument, that you can't funnel federal money to religious entities, including religious schools.
Luke Beck is an associate professor at Monash University's Law School. He says Section 116 of the Australian Constitution is partly based on the Religious Freedom Clause in the United States Bill of Rights.
Section 116 is really about limiting federal power in respect of religion, partly to ensure separation of church and state, partly to ensure respect for religious freedom and individual rights, but largely it's about preventing religious intolerance on the part of the Commonwealth. So the Commonwealth isn't able to favour one religion over others.
And we knew it was going to be difficult in Australia to convince the High Court to accept the American doctrine that Section 116 constructed, as Thomas Jefferson called it, a wall of separation between church and state.
So the dogs tried to show the High Court historical records of debates in the drafting of the Australian Constitution, hoping that these would prove the link between Section 116 and the United States Constitution.
Well, that was when we found out that we couldn't put the historical documents in. The High Court would not allow the constitutional debates into evidence.
This was a huge blow to the dogs' argument. If the High Court didn't have to consider the convention debates, it could come up with its own interpretation of what the drafters of the Constitution meant when they said that the Commonwealth cannot make a law to establish any religion. Sir Anthony Mason was one of the seven judges who decided the dogs' case in the High Court.
I didn't think the argument was sufficiently strong to justify concluding that financial assistance to schools amounted to establishing a religion. In my view, establishing a religion means setting up a religion as a national institution, as the Anglican Church was in England, for example, and that providing financial assistance didn't amount to that.
You'd have to actually establish a religion as the religion of the nation, and that includes making it a national institution, entrenching it as part of the political system, and imposing obligations on citizens to support the religion, and clearly that wasn't happening here.
Anne Toomey, a constitutional law professor at the University of Sydney. On the 2nd of February 1981, the High Court handed down its decision in Canberra.
This is PM. Good evening from Hugh Evans. And as you've heard, a legal challenge begun 8 years ago by the Defence of Government Schools organisation, known as DOGS, against government aid to private schools, was dismissed today by the High Court, which held by a decision of 6-1, with Mr Justice Murphy dissenting, that state aid was valid under the Constitution.
Brian Croke was in the High Court that day.
I had to communicate the judgment to Sydney. The only way to do that was by public phone.
The main court was packed with lawyers, nuns and priests, parents, journalists and visitors. All waited patiently as the judges one by one gave the decision.
When it got to 4 in favour, I bolted. So I was the first one out and down the stairs on the phone to say that the majority had ruled against the plaintiffs and in favour of the Commonwealth and we don't have to worry about it anymore.
Mr Ray Nielsen from the Council for the Defence of Government Schools was bitterly disappointed.
The decision will be an incitement for the churchmen to plunder the taxpayers' purse. There's no doubt about that. So, and it'll be a black day for the public school system in Australia.
6 of the 7 High Court judges ruled that the funding for religious schools was valid because it was for educational purposes and not for establishing a religion. DOGS co-founder Jean Ely was with her newborn baby in country Victoria when she learned about the decision. She drove straight down to Ray Nielsen's house.
So I had this baby, Jamie, and I put him in the car because I thought the baby would give comfort to the Nielsen family. And when I walked into the kitchen, Mrs. Nielsen, she was standing at the kitchen sink. And she said, in these situations, Jean, you just keep working. And that's how she was.
Since the DOGS case nearly 40 years ago, federal governments have expanded their funding of religious schools. Education historian Helen Proctor.
I think that the DOGS case has been interpreted to mean that the Commonwealth has a responsibility to fund non-government schools. And that's not quite what the case found. It found that it was permissible.
It brought legitimacy to the Commonwealth's role as a funder of schools.
Brian Croke went on to become the Executive Director of the Catholic Education Commission of New South Wales, a position he held for 25 years.
Right through the 80s, particularly with the election of the Hawke government, that was the largest single growth period from 84 to 92. While the methods have changed, the quantum has kept on growing and the Commonwealth has kept on becoming more and more the single most significant funder of Catholic schools and probably all religious schools in that sense.
Since the 1980s, the private school sector has exploded, in particular independent schools. And Catholic schools are a long way from where they were when the fight over state aid first began in the 1960s.
A lot of Catholic schools are funded almost entirely by federal government funding. I mean, some people argue that they shouldn't really be called private schools at all because they're very strongly state subsidised.
The debate on school funding has shifted significantly over the last 40 years. Now, the focus is really on how it should be fairly distributed across the sector.
Most people agree that public schools are the losers in this debate, that public schools do seem to be treated as just simply another competitor in the school market. And I think it's often forgotten that public schools, they have this responsibility to enrol everyone, but they do disproportionately enrol the poorest, they disproportionately enrol kids with disabilities, kids with complex needs. That is often not recognised.
Check the My School website and you'll see that, well, not only are the majority of schools still government schools, the average government school is funded at a much higher rate than non-government schools. What would be true to say is that from a Commonwealth point of view, and the Commonwealth is only one player in this, in the 1970s, the balance of the Commonwealth outlays between government and non-government schools was much more even than it is today, definitely.
Brian Croke. Historian and former Catholic priest Michael Hogan says that the disparity between private and public school funding has its origins in the 1970s with the Fraser Liberal government.
Fraser put in place a system of bureaucratic funding whereby the Commonwealth looked after the interests of private schools and therefore mostly Catholic schools, and states had a greater interest in looking after the funding of public schools. And this still remains the case and is still a problem, and as long as it goes on, public schools are going to be relatively disadvantaged when compared with especially a lot of the richer private schools.
And this kind of strange split responsibility has taken on some sort of axiomatic status in the contemporary political world, alongside the widespread belief by both major parties of government that it's political suicide to tamper with private school funding.
Since the Dogs case in 1981, there's been no similar High Court challenge to the federal funding of private religious schools. Luke Beck.
It has encouraged, I think, the federal government to think that they can give money to religion, they can give favours to religious groups if they want, without any constitutional limitations on that. The only limitations are political.
But there could be a twist in this tale. Today, the High Court's decision in the Dogs case is considered controversial because it's based on an approach to interpreting the Constitution that's now outdated.
The High Court said that limitations on federal legislative power must be interpreted as narrowly as possible. But nowadays, the High Court says all provisions of the Constitution should be interpreted as broadly as possible. And at the time of the Defence of Government Schools case, the High Court said you must never ever look at the Hansard or the transcript of the convention debates where the Constitution was written. But nowadays, the High Court says, well, yes, of course you can look at what the people who wrote the Constitution said.
So the Defence of Government Schools tried but ultimately failed to get the High Court to read the convention debates. Why was that so important for the result?
Because that changed the interpretation of what does establishing any religion mean. If you look at the convention debates, we know that they were borrowing from the United States, so American conceptions are relevant. And largely, I think, if you read between the lines, they don't want to go down the American path of culture wars in the courts. The First Amendment and other provisions of the US Bill of Rights are the source of a lot of culture war debates about the role of religion, the role of guns, and the High Court simply saying, we don't want to go down that American path.
Personally, I think that if the case came back to today's High Court, there's a real chance it could strike down federal funding of religious schools. And there are still big question marks over certain aspects of that funding. Luke Beck again.
Giving federal money for educational purposes in a way that plays favourites between religions is probably a serious question as to whether that could possibly be valid. And giving federal money for religious purposes, such as building a chapel or a mosque, for example, that would also have to be seriously under doubt.
If any of these questions come before the High Court in the future, its judges will have to revisit the decision in the Dogs case to work out how to answer them. That's why the Dogs solicitor John Zaguris thinks that despite the loss in 1981, the fight was one worth having.
It's a foundation for future arguments. A decision's been made and we can always go back to it.
The National Council for the Defence of Government Schools solicitor John Zaguris with the final note in this episode of Section 71. Next time, freedom of association is in the spotlight. 60 years ago, the Communist Party of Australia took on the government of Robert Menzies in the High Court, fighting for its right to exist. This case has surprising relevance for us today.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.